This is The Topic is Trek, episode 85, for Friday, February 12th, 2021. Coming up in this episode, how Nichelle Nichols changed the world. Sir Patrick welcomes everyone to their new home. Scotty ends up with pie on his face. All that and more, right now on The Topic is Trek. Tapak! Tape! To be or not to be. Welcome to The Topic is Trek, the podcast that runs on impulse power. Join us for a journey where no show has gone before. If it has to do with Star Trek, there's a good chance we'll talk about it. Sooner or later, because on this show, the topic is Trek. Engage already! Well, there's a good reason that we don't have a video feed of this show, because we got pretty silly while that intro was going. Hello, everyone. I'm Clinton, and I am one of your co-hosts here on The Topic is Trek. But I can't do the show by myself. I have to have some help. And fortunately, I believe this week we have a full crew. We have to check now because, as you know, Craig was off on a secret mission. So let's find out. Beaming in to join us.
There he is.
Yeah. I'm here. Oh, wait.
That's your catchphrase this time around? I'm here?
Wow. Well, that was the lamest one yet. I don't know. No one can say that's been used.
Yeah, it's like Kramer coming in the door. I'm here.
You blew it, buddy.
For a dollar.
You blew that. That ship has sailed, Craig. He's finally got an original one by accident.
Okay.
Yes, that's right.
The one I was going to use was, sounds like somebody's got a case of the Mondays.
I'll go with I'm like here that. Instead.
I'm here.
And apparently joining him at the in the transporter is Mr. Chuck Tomasi.
I've got the instant transporter working from Discovery now. I'm not sure how you knew, Clinton, where to capitalize the H's on Tachbach, Tachbeh.
Every place I looked for it online, that's the way it was spelled. I just got really concerned because I got really close to the microphone because it had to have that power. And I'm thinking, I'm like peaking all the monitors and my signal is probably dropping out and all that kind of stuff.
More phlegm.
Yeah, I needed that.
Cling on phlegm.
Got to talk to Mary Chifo about that. We'll be working on it. Don't worry about it. All right. Well, we have a lot to cover this time around, including our normal subspace chatter. Plus, we're going to be talking about two more Star Trek the Animated Series episodes.
Do we have to?
I guess I'll call them whatever those are. And, of course, our Warp Speed Roundtable question. But let's begin by checking in with Mr. Positivity himself, Charlie, because it's time for subspace chatter.
You don't need all that subspace chatter.
Charlie, you know, we were working on plans about what to do about you next time around, and I think we're going to follow through on those plans. So stay tuned for that. It involves a special character.
We don't need artificial intelligence to tell us what he's going to say either.
That's true.
If the computer predicted he was going to say.
That's a pretty easy.
How did it know?
Pretty easy model to train on that machine learning.
All right, let's start things off with a story from Chuck.
All right, Star Trek Discovery has been nominated for a GLAAD Media Award in the category of Outstanding Drama Series. Other nominees in the category include 911 Lone Star, not the one from
Spaceballs.
Yeah.
Killing Eve.
Lone Star.
I did watch Killing Eve and enjoyed that very much. P-Valley. Ratcheted is also another show. The Umbrella Academy, which I know many people have seen. That was very good. Mm-hmm. Supergirl. Vita. The Wilds. And Winona Earp. Just a side note, Nick Adams GLAAD's director of transgender representation worked with the Discovery team to develop the new characters of Gray and Adira, played, of course, by transgender actor Ian Alexander and non-binary actor Blue Del Barrio, respectively. Winners of the 32nd annual GLAAD Media Awards will be announced during a virtual ceremony in April. We will keep you posted.
Indeed. So I don't think that that gives Discovery the inside edge because they worked with GLAAD. It just, I thought it was interesting to remind people about that. I mean, we're not saying that there's any, you know, no undue influence.
Nepotism.
Yeah. Right. It's a completely separate, you know, section of the organization, I'm sure. Everything is fine.
This is my best work ever.
All right. Well, let's move on from awards coming up to something else that was in theaters, but only for a night. And if you didn't get a chance to go to the theaters to see the one night only showing of Woman in Motion, Nichelle Nichols, Star Trek, and the remaking of NASA, well, don't panic because it's coming to digital and on demand beginning on Tuesday, February 16th. The documentary tells the story of how Nichols in the late 1970s led recruitment efforts at NASA to bring in more women and people of color. Her work helped the agency recruit 8,000 of the nation's best and brightest, including the trailblazing astronauts who became the first African-American, Asian, and Latino men and women to fly in space. Way to go, Nichelle. The documentary features interviews with several notable names, including fellow Star Trek alumni George Takei, Walter Koenig, and Michael Dorn, as well as scientist Neil deGrasse Tyson and his vest, performer Pharrell Williams and Vivica A. Fox, and producer and civil rights attorney Benjamin Crump. And we have a link to the trailer for this movie, this documentary. Just go to the show notes for episode 85 over at the topic is trek.com. So I did not get a chance to go to the theater to see this, and I really want to. So I'm glad that it's going to be available. It doesn't give the platforms necessarily.
It's probably any of them. I mean, normally, unless they specifically say it's on Apple only.
Right.
It's pretty much on anything.
So hopefully get a chance to check that out sometime next week, which would be pretty cool. Cause I've met Nichelle a couple of times, and she is a hot ticket. And the fact that she's getting, you know, some well-deserved credit for all this work that she did, recruitment for NASA, I think is outstanding. So
yeah, she ran over my foot once. I love her. A Dragon Con chair.
Yes. It's just being hurried through the habit trails.
I'm never going to wash that foot again. I'm not.
And I have it till this day.
Anyway. By the way, Craig, Nichelle said, please wash your foot. Don't. Just letting you know.
They're the reason why we don't have Dragon Con anymore.
I know. It's kind of hard to shower and put my one foot out of the shower, you know? So anyway, in our last episode, we talked about the appearance of Anson Mount, Ethan Peck, as Captain Pike and Mr. Spock in the launch of Paramount Mountain online campaign. The ads are used to promote the changing of the guard, which is from CBS All Access to Paramount Plus, and highlighting the variety of programming that will be found on the rebranded service. The ad campaign continued with several more spots, which all led to a 90-second Superb Owl commercial.
Thank you, autocorrect.
Yeah, it's in the wrong spot.
Yeah, Star Trek continued to be featured prominently in the ads. Mr. Spock diagnosed a case of the puppet frostbite. Captain Burnham attempted to get the group across a perilous icy gorge, and as the travelers reached the summit, they were greeted by none other than Stephen Colbert. Oh, yeah.
Yes, well, that's
Patrick
true.
Patrick Stewart.
My goodness, look at the time.
The extremely clever campaign has cameos by several well-known actors, but keep your eye out for more details like MTV Astronaut and the Do Not Touch button on the Nickelodeon game of the same name. So rotoscoped footage of Lucy and Desi, I did see that on there myself, reaching the top of the mountain and more. So Paramount Plus also ran a Star Trek Universe promo featuring characters from Picard, Discovery, and Strange New Worlds. And we have links to all those in the show notes.
Yeah, she said I saw, crack.
Yeah, even after the Super Bowl, I've seen a couple of other ones too. Mm-hmm. At Gail Knight was talking with I cannot remember that guy's name. They were talking, and there was a couple of jokes being sprinkled here and there.
Oh, cool.
Other characters. So there's a few more things going on here. So,
yeah, it was I was wondering the logistics of actually putting these commercials together. I don't remember if you and I talked about this, Chuck, when we mentioned it last time, but clearly a lot of these people were not in the same place at the same time.
Right.
It was pretty good, but yeah, I don't think it was either.
And yet it was sewn together pretty well. And they had lots of angles of people that they had to match shots of, you know, like, yep. You got a wide shot and a close up and a reverse angle of stuff. And then they're all at the top of the mountain there at the end. I'd love to see a lot of the behind the scenes of the actual.
Yeah.
Here, Sir Patrick, this thing together. Sir Patrick, throw a green screen over your couch, sit on the edge of that and we'll work with that.
Hey, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, go ahead.
There was one, you know, on Facebook, sometimes I have abbreviated versions of these ads where it's just a few seconds long or not very long. And this one, I sent a screenshot to you guys, but it didn't convey what it was. Spock, or Ethan Peck as Spock, had his hand on his chest, had the Vulcan sign up in the air, and was swaying to SpongeBob singing.
Oh, yeah.
The motion of the video, which I sent you guys a screenshot, but he's like, he's just going back and forth. He's like, he's really into it. Like Spock's into it.
He needs a lighter. Is what you're saying, right? Just holding.
Or he needs his little bicycle wheel, you know, harp thing.
That's right. Oh boy. That was funny. I laughed at that one.
Yeah. So check those out in the show notes, because not only you might've seen one version of, say, the Frostbite one and one version of the ice bridge, the crack version of the ice bridge one. But there are also alternate versions of both of those commercials. Yeah. I mean, we thought it was interesting when you had Captain Pike reacting to Snooki, but you know, Burnham reacting to Beavis and Butthead is like taking it to a whole new level.
She's just, you know, looking at him like, are they for real? Do they have to be on this show?
You know, I haven't watched Beavis and Butthead in a long time. I don't know that I can go back and watch it again, but watching those commercials reminds me how much I love those two stupid idiots. Oh, boy.
That's what I'll do. If my hair's a little longer, Craig, I'll do a Beavis for you.
There you go. No,
you can be Butthead.
No.
And I'll be Beavis.
No. I'm the tall one.
Boys, there's enough characters for everyone.
Yeah, I'm sure that'll go over well with our spouses.
He said crack.
Sorry.
My name is Cornholio. big giant crack. Okay. Because on this show, the topic is trick.
All right, Chuck, please get us out of this quickly.
All right. Next story, move on. The Roddenberry Foundation has donated $100,000 to help support the upcoming Comic-Con Museum, scheduled to open this year in San Diego's Balboa Park. The donation also coincides with what would have been Roddenberry's 100th birthday. Housed in the park's former Hall of Champions Sports Museum, the Comic-Con Museum will, according to the spokesperson Melissa Peterman, quote, foster and celebrate creativity through comics and popular art forms, unquote. The Roddenberry Foundation is a nonprofit organization that supports Star Trek creator Gene Roddenberry's legacy through initiatives which, quote, encourage innovative approaches to creating a more inclusive, progressive, and harmonious society, unquote. In recognition of the donation, the main lobby of the museum will be named after the foundation. So, check out the show note to Roddenberry Foundation donates $100,000 to Comic-Con Museum in our show notes over on episode 85. Yes. That the topic is trek.com.
Yeah. I thought there was something slightly hilarious about the fact that a bunch of geeks will now inhabit the space formerly used for a sports museum's Hall of Champions.
I've been there. I can picture that Hall of Champions in my head. So long, Hall of Champions.
Yeah, because I was wondering when I first read this story, they didn't identify that that's where it was going. And I said, well, I've been to Balboa Park and I don't think they really put new structures in there. So it has to be housed someplace existing.
Yep.
And I, through a lot of tracing back, I figured out where the building actually was and took a look inside, because they have a video, Comic-Con put out a video where they show the empty space. And then looking at the pictures of the inside of the Sports Hall of Fame, I said, yep, that's exactly the same space.
That'll be neat. Now I want to go back. Road trip.
Let's get in the car.
Alrighty.
Get your double masks.
But before we go, Craig, you've got the next story.
I do. Where'd I go? Oh, yeah. Why did I scroll right back? I thought this was the one I read a minute ago. Anyway, we've covered many stories about Trek fans who have created Star Trek rooms in their homes.
And no longer married.
And no longer married, or never more to begin with.
Yeah.
let's call them fan caves, quote unquote. They can be quite elaborate or just have a nod to the Trek universe. Recently, however, we came across a fan who turned his basement of his home into not only the Bridge of the Enterprise, complete with working displays, but also a transporter room, corridors, and as a bonus, a room with a TARDIS interior.
Wow, so I'm feeling pretty lame with a Dalek in the background and four Star Trek posters on the wall.
Step it up.
Yeah, you just got cardboard cutouts. He had the real thing.
The real thing. I've got a...
So Todd Spann is a computer programmer, not a construction expert, but he did his research and started putting up framing and drywall. When the pandemic is over, Spann says he is open to the idea of giving tours of his Westfield, Indiana, strange new basement. Is that a reference to the new show, Strange New World?
It's going to be the next series, actually, on
Strange New Basement. Hoarders. It's the Doctor Who crossover.
He also says he plans to do more work on the project. So question is, what's left? Crew quarters, rec room, full-size shuttle bay? We can't wait to find out.
Holodeck. It's just got to paint a room black and put some yellow lines on it. Done.
It's also bigger on the inside.
That's the Dreamatorium from Community all of a sudden. So I don't know if you guys had a chance to look at the news report on this one, because this article comes from a local TV station in the area, and they do a walkthrough of a lot of the stuff that he's got. And yeah, it was starting to look like the normal, oh, we've seen this before. Mm-hmm. And then you notice all the displays actually have stuff on them, and he can control them all from a pad. Okay, that's a nice step. Then there's a shot of him walking down to that room from coming down the stairs through a transporter area and down a definite Starship corridor with the lights in the floor and the angled walls. And it's like, whoa, this took it to a whole new level.
Oh, yeah.
At that point.
See, if you're walking down the stairs to the basement, you should make that more like a Jeffrey's tube. Just change that whole stairway downstairs.
Climb down.
Right.
You got to crouch down and walk through it.
While you're getting electrocuted.
Yeah, you have to have the arcs going across right above your head.
Feels like ants crawling all over my body.
I did.
Well,
I think
we have a suggestion for him then.
I did go to this guy's his YouTube channel, and he had videos of him building all the stuff. You know, so if you want to spend all the time to go look at it, I just skipped it. I just skipped through, and I'm sorry, the video started playing. It messed me up when I opened the tab. But anyway, I skipped through a few of them, and it was pretty cool to see. But yeah, the last video he had with the whole walkthrough is fantastic.
And it also gives a hope to all those of us who have no idea how to do construction, saying, well, he didn't know either, and look what he's done. Right.
Hey, I hacked this studio desk back together after I tore it apart, so I'm feeling pretty confident.
Yeah, where's your interior of your TARDIS, though?
I choose to invest in my studio.
In your what?
In my studio.
What? Oh.
You'd have all the room you wanted for your studio if you had the interior of a TARDIS. I'm just saying.
If I made it look like a TARDIS, I'd be doing one production really well. But
does look like it, or it did.
I have multiple productions to do.
All right. But be that as it may, and it may be that way, we're going to move on to our final story. We note the passing of acting great Christopher Plummer, famous for roles that spanned from 1965's The Sound of Music all the way up to 2019 Knives Out. But it's his role as the villainous General Chang in Star Trek VI, The Undiscovered Country, that cemented his legacy in the Trek world. Plummer was one of us. He was a Star Trek fan long before being cast as Chang. In an interview for William Shatner's The Captain's documentary, Plummer told Shatner, quote, "I was a serious Trekkie when it first came out. I was living in England all through the 1960s, but I watched you on television over and over again." Plummer was thrilled to get into full Klingon makeup to play the Shakespearean quoting Klingon. He quipped that he looked a bit like Israeli military leader and eye patch wearer Moshe Dayan in Heat.
Oh my, that's an interesting, for those of you who are old enough to remember him.
He reprised his Chang role in the 2000 video game Star Trek Klingon Academy, where fans even learned how the general lost his eye. Christopher Plummer was 91 years old.
He will be missed.
He will indeed.
Yeah. That was a great role. I liked him in that role. He sold that movie.
Right. I mean, I think he gave it a lot of gravitas that, you know, sometimes Trek movies have it and sometimes they don't. And I think he definitely brought it, him and both he and David Warner, but David Warner was only in the very first part.
Yeah.
Of that.
Yeah. Can't you just see that exchange between Plummer and Shatner? He goes, "I was a serious Trekkie when it first came out. I was living in England all through the 1960s, but I watched you on television over and over again." And you see Shatner go,
"It was the only station I could get." Yeah, As like a Kirk. Yeah. Okay, thanks.
I wish I could say the same.
Never seen one of your movies, Chris. Actually, Christopher Plummer and William Shatner did stage work together long, you know, back at the beginning of their careers. They did Shakespeare together, I believe. So, very appropriate thing for them to have done.
Would you actually call a character villainous?
Yes, if he's the villain of the story, if he's the
traitorous
protagonist. Antagonist. I got him backwards. Antagonist.
Well, I guess I was trying to remember. I just watched it. I was trying to remember. Was he one of the co-conspirators?
Yes, he was involved with that.
Okay. But then it's villainous. Okay. Move along.
because he had to be involved in the plot to have the ship underneath the
Enterprise. You're right. Yeah. I was just saying, yeah, you're right. You're right.
Never mind. Spoiler Scratch alert. All that. Spoiler alert.
I guess that's our new spoiler alert sound.
I actually hit the klaxons and the buttons at the same time. It's this one. Spoiler alert. There, in case you haven't watched Star Trek VI yet, or your grandchildren haven't watched it yet.
I did love that movie, though. I thought it was great.
Yes, I think coming off of Star Trek V, anything would be good, but the fact that it was actually a good movie, you know, was a bonus on top of
well,
it.
Well, you know,
it can only go up from here.
Yes. Well, I looked at it like, you know, they intentionally a lot of the Marvel movies, they change them up to match a certain theme or a style of movie. Mm-hmm. And that was kind of what they did with this. It was more a murder mystery kind of thing rather than just a, you know, we pissed somebody off on a planet and kind of, you know, kind of story. You know what I mean?
Right. Which is no big surprise because Nicholas Meyer is a big fan of Sherlock Holmes. So the fact that he did the production, the 7% Solution, which was the Sherlock Holmes.
Yes.
Story. You want to feel old? This December, that movie will be 30 years old.
Look, day over 29.
You're just building on to what I mentioned earlier to you guys before we started this podcast.
We're getting old, gentlemen.
Yeah. We can't everything remember I remember that. That was is a lot older. Started.
Yeah, I think everything I've been remembered of this last week has been about 10 years longer than I thought.
So you're saying you went to see The Undiscovered Country last weekend at the theater? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, which was actually 30 years ago. Wow, it seems like I just saw that.
And I still have the popcorn. It's right here. Oh, it's a little green now. All right. And in Vulcan, Alberta, Canada news.
It's cold.
Yeah, that's pretty much the news right now. So it's time to come back and close up Subspace Chatter, which means I get the thrill of saying goodbye, Charlie.
I want to stay.
Now, we covered a lot of stories in Subspace Chatter, and now that Charlie's gone, I can tell you that we have a bunch more stories, including an intro that I have an X in, which means I should be filling something in this, but we have links to 60, yes, I said 60, stories.
That was the worst count I've ever heard.
Well, I'm doing it on the fly because somebody stuck the emergency of the count in there.
Come on. Louis Armstrong can do a better one
than
that.
All right. Here we go. I'm going to try again. 60.
Better.
Any better? Okay. Yeah,
closer.
Okay. We didn't have time to cover those, and you can get all sorts of articles, one of which includes one by a friend of the show, Melissa Bartel, about Discovery's first ever all-female bridge crew. So check out all the stories that we didn't get a chance to get to, but you can get to them just in time to be done for the next episode of The Topic.
Wait a minute. There was an all-female bridge crew when all the guys were in the animated series.
Yeah, but they were just kind of like there for like an hour. And then, you know.
They're just covering for the men.
Not the same.
I'm calling shenanigans on this one.
Well, you tell Melissa that. All righty. But now it's time to go out on our main mission. And our main mission is getting this close, just this close to the end of Star Trek, the animated series. We're talking about the next two episodes of the very short second season of Star Trek, the animated series, specifically The Practical Joker and Albatross.
Can I say shame on you, Bill Reed, again?
Yeah, because he's responsible for directing both of these. But the first one, The Practical Joker, was written by Chuck Menville. And I'll give you a brief synopsis. If you've already seen it, then this will help refresh your memory. If you haven't, spoiler alert from 1974, I guess. The Enterprise is surprised by a fleet of Romulan ships. And in order to escape, the ship goes through an unidentified energy field. The field infuses and uses an anomaly into the computer system resembling the personality of a practical joker. But the jokes turn deadly and the crew must figure out a way to repair the ship's artificial intelligence before it is too late. Now, a couple of fun facts about this episode. The previous episode, and we talked about this last week, BEM was originally meant to have more of a practical Joker storyline. And the speculation is that that element may have been removed from that story to not have two practical joking episodes in a row. The episode features the very first appearance of a holodeck.
Yes. I was going to point that out, but that's pretty interesting.
As well as the first holodeck accident.
Yes. So, now they called it
all in one episode.
They called it the rec room.
Yeah, the rec room.
It's kind of like watching that first episode of Game of Thrones where they have death and nudity and all, everything's thrown into one.
Roddenberry had originally intended to introduce the holodeck into the third season of the original series, but budget constraints prevented it. At least that's a speculation. To me, I think that that wouldn't be the case because think about it. If you have the holodeck, you can go any place, which means you can just use any standing set you want to anywhere. And I think that cuts down on the amount of sets you have to use. But anyway.
Oh, let's go return to the Archons. Peace, Landru. That's so relaxing.
The same inflatable Enterprise gag that you see in this episode was later used in the Star Trek novel, How Much for Just the Planet?
Really? I missed that novel.
Have you read that before?
I have not.
The name is so familiar. I must have read it, but you know, that would have been ages ago. So if I did, I don't remember anything about the plot on it. I can't remember if that's a Harry Mudd story or not. So not sure.
Like Cyrano Jones.
There's so many Star Trek you know, novels or books and whatever, coloring books. Well, we talked about that. Was it Random? Simon Schuster was getting sold to CBS.
No, they get.
Was it the other way around?
No, they own it. Viacom did own it, and they sold it off.
Oh, yeah, they sold it off, and it had like they said like 800 books. It was a ridiculous number.
So, what do people think of the practical joke? Well, we've called an audible on that one already.
I think the joke was on us.
The horse has spoken.
Yeah, the joke was on us. I don't know. There were some pretty good bits, I guess. I like Scotty's little prayer. Hold together, little darling. Hold together.
I mean, we do get the Kirk is a jerk shirt.
Yes.
which I just about fell over laughing when somebody wore that. I think it was Dragon Con, or it might have been on the cruise. I can't remember where I saw that, but that was their cosplay. Yeah. It was just wearing the yellow shirt that said Kirk is a jerk on the back. That was awesome. I noticed a number of things. So, and I think I'd seen this on other episodes, depending on what shot you've got of Kirk in the captain's chair, look at the plaque that's next to the turbo lift. It keeps changing colors. It's blue, it's gold, it's green. It's all over the place.
I think repaint that all the time. I think it changes
from minute to minute.
You know, like the background part of the cell, you think that would be kind of static, so they just change the characters on the front.
That's
of it.
What well, I'm clearly wondering.
Clearly, what's happened is that it's been infected by the virus that's in the next episode.
From the next episode. Yes. Of course, these are all out of order in terms of star dates.
I did write down about the holodeck. I was watching. I went, whoa. Are they talking about a holodeck here?
And indeed.
Sure enough.
Yeah. As they go into the energy field, I realize just how noisy space can be.
Yes, I was commenting to Bonnie about that. So space is really, really noisy.
Yeah, they need new spark plugs on that nebula or something.
It was also interesting in the holodeck itself that when they're choosing the place to go, and then McCoy suggests that they go to the forest.
Yeah.
And later on, McCoy thanks Uhura for suggesting it. And
thinking, oh, I missed that. What? That's awesome. He's got a senior moment there.
Very confused.
Yeah, because she agreed with him. And said, that sounds nice. I'm wondering why everybody got spilled by the trick glasses. They had, you know, the milk or whatever it was on their shirt.
Oh, yeah.
Except Kirk. Or was he just waiting for the wilting fork trick?
Yeah.
No, he was waiting to see if anybody was going to fall over dead by, you know, tasting their food first.
he has to realize that the trick is there is no fork. That's how you bend the fork. What else did we have? Oh,
I got a kick out of the fact that Spock had a clear no understanding whatsoever what a dribble glass was and tried to explain the probabilities.
Probabilities astronomical. Yeah.
Well, McCoy said, oh, we did that all the time with trick glasses.
So they're in the holodeck and they hear the laughter. And what's McCoy's comment? Oh, it's probably just the audio tapes rewinding, because that sounds just like laughter to me.
I wrote that down, too. Like,
well, also, and audio tapes rewinding to begin with. Well, let's get past that part about it. You know,
not the little cards that they put, you know, the colored cards that they put in the machines.
The audio tapes that back up our memory banks.
Yeah, exactly.
The gravity goes out. The practical Joker tries to defend himself, so Scotty can't shut down the main computer. He's crawling on the ceiling when there's no gravity. And then they cut to the bridge and you see Eric's floating completely motionless. It's like, because that's what I would do if the gravity went out. I hold perfectly still like a duck in danger.
That's three arms and three legs to animate. That character's going to stay still.
We don't have the budget.
That's true. That's funny. Well, I sent you guys a screenshot of that episode as I was watching it, and Kirk is in the foreground. He's kind of huge, and Eric's is smaller, and you see his three arms and three legs. It looks like Kirk's looking at him like, what?
Yeah, there's no sense of perspective in the shot. It's just like it doesn't make any sense. I did get a chuckle, though, out of Scotty crawling out of the ceiling, out of the room, and then gets into the corridor. I'm going, I'm waiting for it. 3, 2, 1, and just falls to the floor.
Oh yeah. Come on.
They did. I mean, the saving redeeming thing of this whole show is, of course, the laughing scene when they flood the ship with laughing gas. The computer floods the ship with laughing gas and everybody starts bursting out laughing. And then, of course, we hear this.
What are you mumbling about?
We have an imposter aboard.
Eric, what would we do without you? What would we do without you?
So the McCoy and Sulu and Uhura are trapped inside of the holodeck rec room, and they're rescued by a bad Freddie Mercury with a pry bar. I look at this guy going, what? They slapped a mustache on this guy, and he clearly had the rocking early 70s thing going.
Got to animate another guy? No, just put a mustache on this one.
it'll be fine.
And just where did they get an inflatable ship?
Well, now that's one of my questions, and I don't have an answer to the second part of this, and I was going to look it up, and I just ran out of time. I didn't have the time. All right. Two questions about the inflatable Enterprise, which is 10 times the size of the Enterprise. First, okay, you could replicate. I understand the computer could use replicators to replicate.
There ain't no replicator that big.
But, well, now there's a replicator that big. You would need the volume of material that you would divert into making that. So they have, where did that volume of material come from?
It's energy. If it's a replicator, then they convert it energy to matter.
Wait,
I see.
But didn't we just see on Star Trek?
The Admiral was talking about the fact that it was recycled poo. So
the second in command on that Romulan ship sure sounded wimpy.
Hey guys, we need some material for the replicator.
Yeah, but also, this is the part that I couldn't look up. Now we know that in an atmosphere, if you have a say a helium balloon,
yes,
and you launch it. It will expand, the gas inside will expand, and so the balloon will get bigger and bigger, it will pop and fall back to the ground. If you were in the vacuum of space, what volume of some gas, obviously doesn't have to be helium, but what volume of gas atmosphere would you have to pump into something that's an inflatable 10 times the size of the Enterprise? And where would that come from if it's more than the entire volume of the Enterprise?
It's like it's like a life vest. You pull the CO2 cartridge and it goes, okay.
They went to Party City and picked up a helium tank.
Oh. Right.
And that's why you hear this.
Actually, I think it's not so much a question as what gas you'd put in there is. Probably pressured gas. How much pressure
any gas under pressure? Because there's no going. There's no pressure in space, so you don't have to pump a whole lot into it to make it expand. My concern at the end is though, Kirk tricks the computer by saying he's afraid to go back into the energy field. If somebody is afraid, that's not typically what a practical joker would do. They're out for a laugh. They're not out for the fear factor.
Well, keep in mind that. The crew is basically on the verge of dying and it's still going, I don't know. I think the Enterprise went from funny to funny kill, you know.
Oh, like Chucky dolls.
But also, you know, the fact that, so what you're saying is if you go back through the same thing that caused the problem, automatically that's going to uncause the problem.
Yes, that's Star Trek logic. We'll reverse the polarity.
Well, no, they did that already with the atmosphere, with the artificial gravity, and you saw what happened.
Mm-hmm.
I also was thinking about Uhura's solution to getting out of the rec room, the holodeck, if you will. It is a logical solution. It negates the way the holodeck works, however.
Yeah, she says if we walk far enough, we're going to run into a wall. No.
Because the way the holodeck would work is it would shift your perspective so that you end up walking in circles and can't walk straight.
Which leads me to wonder,
you're walking at an angle.
If you're in a holodeck, how do two people get separated?
Yeah.
Oh, I can't find this person. Well, they're in this room somewhere. They can't be too far away.
Right. But if the computer is controlling the walls or whatever that separator is, it, from both people's perspective, it shifts what that person is perceiving as where the other person is, or what the obstacle is.
Clearly, I'm not the inventor of the holodeck. I don't understand.
No. So I did think it was the correct solution, and I'm happy that they said that would be the logical thing to do, is that you're trapped, but you're in a confined space. You should be able to get to an exit by walking towards that exit.
Or ask. Computer.
Yeah, stop exit. And ask for directions.
You don't want to ask the practical joker computer.
Yeah. Right. It would give you like a leading you to the wrong wall with a whoopee cushion or something. You
know? No, I was just watching that and they were like, well, just feel around. We can find. I was like, just ask it. Computer, exit. Hey, I did like how Spock was put his eyes on the visor and he came out with
the circles. That is a classic.
And he still didn't quite get it. He's like, what? Oh, I wrote down that Kirk asked him to question the main computer, and I noticed he didn't say computer. He just asked his question. Or he didn't say computer or even Alexa or hey Google.
He was gonna say, well, when I'm watching the episodes, I'm thankful whenever they don't do that, because my Alexa's, you know, bloop.
What you didn't see, Craig, was just off screen. He had a button to trigger that, like an Amazon Dash button.
A foot button. Right. Foot switch.
All right. Well, let's move on to our second episode. Again, I put that in quotation marks, I guess. And that is Albatross, written by Dario Finelli and again directed by Bill Reed. Yes, Bill Reed is responsible here. First aired on September 28th, 1974. A brief synopsis: inhabitants of the planet
Dramia,
Orion. They claim that McCoy headed a mass inoculation program on Dramia 2, but after he departed, a massive plague ravaged the planet, virtually wiping out the entire population. Kirk and Spock travel to the decimated planet to seek answers. A couple of fun facts from this episode. The writer's guide to the original series and the animated series says that McCoy joined Starfleet in middle age after he was divorced, meaning he couldn't have worked on Dramia 2 during his early adulthood. And at one point, McCoy can be seen wearing a gold shirt, and Scotty appears with captain's braids on his sleeves throughout the episode.
Yeah, I noticed the gold shirt at the end when they were on the transporter pad. What just happened? Who's standing there?
We've never seen him with it anywhere, I don't think.
People with strange colored costumes on this animated series never happens, always.
Yeah, right. Color changing costumes must be the nebula again. The aurora, which I have no scientific explanation for. Aurora are generated by electrons being excited and giving off light, you know, like the northern lights when you have a solar flare coming in. How does this happen in the middle of space?
Very carefully.
Okay.
I don't know. I mean, and they spend such pains to point it out.
We didn't have Dr. Erin McDonald back in the 70s. I don't even think she was born yet.
When you have electrons that really love each other.
When a mommy, daddy, and electron.
I see.
And they come together excited in a very special way. Okay. Yeah. Where else to begin? Go ahead.
I thought it was funny. They were, I forget who said it, but they said they were at the Hall of Justice.
Yes, I noted that. Well, Superman and Batman should be able to help you with this, and Wonder Woman, no problem.
You want that?
I can hear the story.
That's it. Meanwhile, in the Hall of Justice, in the Dramian Hall of Justice.
I'd be concerned, guys, that Martian Manhunter has already turned green, so I don't know. I don't know about that, so... my goodness.
They say there's a plague 19 years ago, and hundreds of people died. That's a pretty small plague for an entire planet. The whole Dramia 2. Now,
it's the same species, though. So I'm wondering, had they begun to colonize the planet, perhaps, or something?
Are they or are they not in the same star system? Hence the name Dramia and Dramia 2. Because
I'm assuming they're next to each other at that, you know, at that
they're point. They're traveling at warp 6 for like half the show to get there. I can't figure out how far this planet is. And yet they slow down painlessly to go through this. Oh, boy, it was terrible. And records from 19 years ago are mysteriously horrible.
Like dust in this one case.
It was 19 years ago, not 500 years ago, Spock. Yeah. Come on.
Hey, I did like how Spock was doing research and he found out that Vulcans had immunity to the thing, he was like,
Yeah.
Gonna stop there.
Yeah, well, I'm cool. I don't know about you guys, but I'm all set.
Sucks
well,
then, to be
well,
you.
Then we're done. Oh, well, I'm immune. I'm done here.
Peace out.
Spock gives him a sucks to be you.
Don't give me that sarcastic Vulcan salute. Get back to work.
So Deimos decides to sneak up on the Enterprise, spy on them. And I think having the hangar doors open is just a little obvious. Wouldn't somebody go, well, that's curious. I think I'll board anyway.
Not only have them open, have him watch them open them.
Yes, that's curious. And then he's holding a weapon that looks like a turkey baster.
Well, maybe it is.
Okay, could be.
Turkeys can be dangerous.
But I got to admit, there was something about the Dramian character. They each had a unique face, which I loved.
Mm-hmm. Yes, and a unique outfit.
They had a unique outfit, and yet their physique was consistent. You know, the big mm-hmm. shoulders, the narrow hips, the long legs. They had different feet or footwear, I guess.
And different approach to digits. They had very, very long
tentacle-like things. Yeah,
looked like Groot.
Maybe that was a precursor to Groot. Groot was a Dramian gone Woody. But
let's not go there at all. So let's move on from there.
Deimos sneaks off the planet, but yet the Supreme Prefect somehow magically knows, how's Deimos doing over there? Yeah, he inquires about this. Nobody told him that we're aware of, because this was supposed to be a secret mission.
He has a big brain. Big brain.
I want to know.
Text message.
I'm not being interstellar racist or anything, but how did Uhura and Eriks turn blue?
I was wondering the same thing.
The pigmentation of their skin is entirely different.
I mean, in theory, for all of them, it should be different, you know, for
the Dramians.
The Dramians, it should not be the same colors at all, because it is, they said it's affecting the pigment. And okay, sure, I could see shades
right
that kind of lean towards all those different colors. But like, no, they just solid.
Look, they can only animate up to like 16 colors. Okay?
Right. It was an 8-bit cartoon.
An 8-bit episode.
Whoa, we can't do any more than that.
And how does Spock know that he's going to beam down to the planet to do a jailbreak, and he's not a carrier of this thing? He's like, oh, well, I'm not sick. I can beam down and rescue McCoy and everything.
Well,
to my
point earlier, I'm immune.
Yeah, that's right.
But he doesn't know that he's immune.
Well, no, he knows he's immune. He doesn't know that he's not a carrier.
And who are these Saurians? They based it on the Saurian flu, right?
Right.
We've got Saurian brandy. How can we have never met the Saurians yet?
As Saru, I don't know.
Keep taking their alcohol and just.
Yeah, right. Their chief export is secrecy, apparently.
Yeah. They're only seen at convenience stores.
And I think we all noticed that one of the, that Commander Deimos had a very strong New York accent.
I swear I've heard that actor's voice before somewhere, like on TOS. He sounds like the guy who was the captain who became Caesar. Was that Bread and Circuses?
Yeah.
That's the only thing I can place, but it might have been another character, the one with the Nazis. Patterns of Force. Could have been that one as well. So I'm going to have to go back and watch those and go, Deimos, good to see you again.
Yeah, we did try to look him up on the various suspects of IMDb and Memory Alpha, but we couldn't find anything there.
I can recognize the voices, but the Kirk turns blue, comes to the bridge, falls down, goes to the transporter, falls down. He certainly falls down. I was like, dude, You're half dead already. You know, quit trying to be the hero.
Spock was trying to prop him up and he fell down.
Right.
It's a life alert. You know, he's just going to have to
get a walker or something, dude.
He falls in the sonic shower. He needs to have one of those little buttons he can push, you know.
Kirk, are you feeling blue?
I like the fact that Spock is going through the records and finds a little bit of information or can't find stuff. And of course, McCoy's logical inspiration is, you know, work harder. Do things. You know?
Do things. Push those buttons.
Stuff. Do your Vulcan stuff.
Oh, goodness gracious.
He did give one of the Draimians a Vulcan neck pinch, which I thought was very cool with those big shoulders. That must have been a big stretch on his hand.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
And glad he knew that was going to work.
It always works. Of course it works.
Yeah.
I was noticing that I thought about, so we have this episode here and McCoy says, if I'm ever in jail again, you know, blah, 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 blah. Then I thought, I don't know how many there are. How many times has the crew of a Star Trek series broken out of jail?
Every one of them.
It's got to be dozens and dozens of times. And the movies as well. They're breaking out of jail on a constant basis. Mm-hmm.
Jails are meant to be broken.
Even jailed planets.
They even have a jailbroken iPhone.
Yeah. It's amazing. That's how much jailbreaking they do. Yeah. Just so much jailbreaking. They're all criminals. I think that's we've
like how they wrestle with the moral implications of jailbreaking them out, but they do it anyway.
Yeah.
Why are you debating? Spock, I've got to stand trial. It's like a kangaroo court? You're not going to know anything.
Just cut to the chase. You're going to do it anyway. Why are you arguing about it? It's like me trying to argue about buying something off Amazon for $20. I'm like, why am I arguing with myself? Just do it.
And I love the confidentiality that they have when they're talking to McCoy in the jail. So the guards are like staring at them from like 2 feet away and then goes, okay, I'm going to tell everything that you said.
Well, that's because the guard was so confident that it's not going to work. Our justice is swift.
Yes, that's swift enough. Apparently there's a long delay before the swift justice actually happened.
To my imagination, or did these two hurt a little more than the other?
The saving grace of the Practical Joker is it didn't take itself seriously, you know. maybe that was the saving grace of it. Eric's laughing, I suppose. But on that regard, we now have to rate these episodes. So on a scale of 1 to 10 funny messages to put on Kirk's uniform, I'm going to ask all of you to rate The Practical Joker. I'm going to start with Chuck on rating The Practical Joker.
I got to say that the humor did work with me. So I'm going above the fold with 5.5.
All right. And Craig.
I'll give this one a 5 because there were some things that kind of made me laugh, especially the Kirk as a jerk.
Right.
And bonus points for Eric's, because I think I think I told you guys before we started watching before we did the episode tonight, was, you know, he's the gem in all of these, to be honest with you.
He gets the MVP award. What are you talking
That's
about?
Right.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, somebody's got to get in this. And
what are you mumbling about?
I don't even know, Eric. I don't know. All right. I gotta rate it myself. And I'm going to go with Chuck on that one. I got to give it a 5.5. I think that there were several times that I did chuckle in this episode, and I've seen it before. I have seen it several times before. And some of that stuff, just the timing was really good on it. I mentioned that you have Scotty falling from the ceiling on this perfect 1-2-3 count. And then you have him hit in the face with a pie, which I thought was another great bit. And of course, Eric's laugh.
One thing I didn't mention was the awkward laughing. It started with Sulu. He went, he started laughing quiet.
Yeah. The trick glass. Now I like the fact that Clinton, you were telling us online that Bonnie had watched this for the first time and laughed at the Kirk is a jerk shirt.
Yep, she just laughed.
I would pay good money to hear that reaction.
I know, right? I would too.
All right. So we've got sort of like a middle of the road for Practical Joker, which isn't bad. And I think we all agree that really it was the
for the animated series. That's Academy.
I was going to say that is like gold. It's absolute gold.
Yeah. They were nominated for a Gold Globe for this.
They were. Or a Razzie, but one or the other. I don't remember which. Right. Now we get to Albatross. So on a scale of 1 to 10 jailbreakouts, which is what I'm giving.
What? Why was it? I'm trying to figure out why they even titled this Albatross.
It has to do with the rhyme. Well, actually, I didn't come up with this theory. Bonnie did that. It has to do with the rhyme of the Ancient Mariner and the killing of the albatross and all the bad. That's what I. That's the best we can come up with.
Wow, that's pretty deep for this audience.
Indeed. Deep for this episode, actually.
Mm-hmm.
Deep for us.
They invested more in researching the title than they did the rest of the show.
Yeah, right.
I'm going to give this one
a... Of course, Clinton. You go first.
I'm going to give this one a... Well, I'm going to go reverse order, so I'll start. I'm going to give this one a 2.5.
Oh, ouch! I think that's one of our lowest scores yet.
I couldn't, you know.
Nothing to sink your teeth into.
Nope, nothing. I mean, I have things to complain about in The Practical Joker, but it's because I was thinking about it. This one is like, I don't want to think about this episode. I want it to go away. All right, let's go backwards. So, Craig, you're next.
I'll give it an 8. No, I'm just kidding.
What?
What's he smoking?
Yeah, no, I'm thinking
Replicator.
More like a...
Replicate me some of that.
Yeah, right. I'm more in the... I'm going to say 2.5. This one did not do anything for me. So just leave it there. How about you, Chuck?
I'm with you guys. There wasn't much to hang on to, but I'm going to go back to the one saving thing that I did put a star next to on my notes, and that is the Draymian character itself. I thought there was some originality there that I think that brings it up to I'm split between a 3.5 and a 4, but you get kind of get the idea that there's something more than 2.5.
Right. Okay.
Not a lot more, but a little something more in there, a little bonus there for that one. All right. Our next two animated series episodes will be the final ones of Star Trek, the animated series.
Hey, are we going to have to look back at all these reviews and decide which one we like the most?
No.
We'll just look back in anger if we do that. So if you want to watch them ahead of time, you can check out How Sharper Than a Serpent's Tooth and The Counterclock Incident, which features the appearance of what captain? Have you guys seen this before? Captain April.
Oh, that's right. Oh, this was the Captain April. Yep.
All right. So we'll look forward at least to mentioning the good actual first captain of the Enterprise. All right. Time to come back from our main mission and have our warp speed round table.
You want a sound effect for that? It's going to cost
extra. Sure. Let's go for something. Surprise me. And the wheel of sound effects. Oh, I've opened the communicator to do that. So let me just dial it in here. And all right. The question this time around is, which episode of Star Trek, and this can be from any series, would you make disappear forever?
I think you just told us about 5 minutes ago when we were rating Albatross.
Don't put anyone in that bet for me on that one.
I think Chuck's probably got the same one I'm thinking of.
So this can be like when you... Go to Memory Alpha, it's not there. You go to IMDb, it's not there. You pull out your DVD, your complete set of every episode, and it's no longer there. And you go, that's nice. All right, let me start then. Let me start with Craig. Do you have, if you have something already set in your head?
I think it's the same one that Chuck's going to say, because we were just talking about this the other day. And that was the Voyager episode where they go past warp 10.
Threshold,
yes. Thank you.
How can you forget? Those who do not remember the past are condemned to watch it again.
Yeah, I know. Right? That one or TNG, and I'm sorry, I can't think of the name of it because I just was thinking about it. Same kind of thing where everybody was de-evolving and you know, Deanna Troi was like a reptile.
Yes.
And
yes. So that whole concept apparently is one that you're.
Yeah. Didn't work for me.
Okay. Fair enough. But between the two of them, it would be Threshold for you.
Yeah. Let's go with Threshold. I think that one was weirder than the TNG one.
I mean, I know that the actors are right with you on that one.
Yeah.
They're creeped out by it as much as the rest of us are.
Well, I think the TNG one was a little more on the horror side because everybody was de-evolving to the point where they were working off instinct rather than.
Right. But you know, doesn't Riker like turns into Neanderthal type of.
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah. It's got the big brow.
Yeah. The beard looks the same, but it's very strange.
Yeah.
All right, I'll go next to break it up in case you two both have the same episode. I'm going to go back to Classic Trek. Mm-hmm. And it's not going to be for Spock's brain because that at least is just.
I know. So I'm going to say it and I'll tell you if I agree.
All right. I'm going to go with the Omega Glory.
Oh, yes. That's not the one I was thinking of. But
the Coms and the Yangs and.
Freedom.
Yeah. I mean, talk about stretching it just too far, just one step too far. When you pull out the old document at the end, we the people, and it looks like, no, I want this gone. I want this eradicated. This is a terrible episode. Whoever shot it should be, you know, going galaxy
shot. Whoever shot it should be shot.
That's going to be the title of our next episode, Epobnista.
Yeah.
That's right.
So that is, every time I'm watching bits and pieces of it, I go, nope. And you have, that's also the same episode where Spock not only doesn't have to be right next to the person, but he can cross the room and kind of look at the other person and put the suggestion in their head.
Right. That
they should go and open the communicator. It's like, no, this is all horribly wrong.
Please, it was a stop. Jedi mind trick.
All right. So that is mine. And what's mine is mine and shall never be taken. Oh, wait, that's.
You can have it.
Well, according,
what about you?
According to a quick Google search of worst Star Trek episode ever, the internet kind of agrees that Shades of Grey from TNG was up there. But I'm not going with that one.
There's reasons for Shades of Grey that have to do with production issues. So,
I mean, that's are you calling writer strike on them?
Yeah, so that they had to go with something that they just had to use, basically a clip show
montage. So yeah,
I mean that's what they had to do. So they had to fulfill in the number of episodes, and so. You know, I mean, it's at least there's a reason for that being.
Okay, I'm leaving that one alone. Craig picked Threshold. So for variety, I totally agree. That is a terrible episode. If you look on IMDb, it's like a 5 point nothing. It's pretty darn low, which
it's down into animated series territory.
Yes, yeah. It is. I'm going TOS with Clinton, but I'm going with the Apple.
Yay, brother.
No, that's Way to Eden.
That's Way to Eden. No, the Apple is one of the other people that look like hippies with Vol.
Yes, right? The flower children, the Hawaiians.
Yes, the other flower children. Exactly.
There's so many hippies, it's hard to keep them straight.
I mean, yeah, Spock's brain is low-hanging fruit. I think we all agree with that. Brain and brain, what is brain? Like, please no more.
An interesting choice. Given the fact that also Way to Eden exists, is there a reason for the Apple instead? Or
Way to Eden is right in there with them. I mean, there's this bottom of the barrel number of episodes in TOS. There's something about the Apple that just seemed pointless to me. It's like, let's disrupt this culture that is perfectly fine throwing food at some kind of computer system that consumes energy and has them all fooled, and then we'll let them discover sex.
Yeah. And having having Kirk kind of talk about sex with the natives was
no prime directive problem there, is there? Very disturbing.
You know,
when
a man and a woman look, you don't want Kirk teaching your kids about sex.
No. could be that creature over there. You could be that creature, whatever, you know, you don't know. So, yes. Okay. I think these are all fine candidates, but you know what? There are what, over 800 hours of Star Trek episodes.
So start watching.
We're sure that the listener has a different opinion about what episode they would like to have just vanish forever.
That's right.
From the Trek universe. And you can let us know which one you think. We're going to try to put up a graphic intensive indicator of our, for you to answer the question of the week on the social medias. But regardless of that, just feel free to comment on our Facebook page or send us a tweet about what you think is the episode. And again, any series you like, the episode that you want obliterated. I don't, Chuck is doing something, but
I'm flying my comm badge.
Oh, I see. All right.
No, I could do the traditional take off your comm badge, throw it on the table, and I'm out of here.
Yeah. Okay.
I resign.
That's right. You got to flip it upside down, though, so we can see your serial
Smith.
Number.
Yeah.
Section 31 has offered me a job. I'm going there.
Right.
But right now, it is time to refill the dilithium chamber and try to warp on out of here. Ooh, that button is just getting weirder all the time.
Yeah. You want this one?
Yeah. Get out and push.
Yeah. Never mind.
So you can find me, Clinton, at Comedy Forecast, all one word, with the number 4.com. And coming up very soon will be the April Podcast A Day event. So look forward to that. You can also find me on Instagram. Exactly, Eric's. I know you are waiting for it in particular. And matter of fact, when Eric's listens to Comedy Forecast, this is what he always does.
What did he say?
What are you mumbling about?
Yeah.
All right, but who speaks for you guys?
I'll speak. All right, so you can find Chuck and myself over at the Technorama Podcast. You can just search for Technorama Podcast in Google and find us on all the places we're at. We're on Facebook, Twitter, and our own website at chuckchat.com.
Excellent. And time to hit the theme, boys.
Can you tune that in a little bit better?
I'm trying. It's AM. I don't know. Oh, there we go. If you like the show, please be sure to tell a friend about it and subscribe so you never miss an episode. We'd love to hear from you. Follow us on Twitter at The Topic is Trek. Visit our Facebook page or visit thetopicistrek.com. Until next time, on behalf of Chuck, Craig, and myself, I'm Clinton, thanking you for listening. And as we always say here on The Topic is Trek,
don't put on the red shirt.
Nailed it.
What is he mumbling about?
Go ahead, Eric. You get the last laugh.